We're talking about the comeback, reversing the curses in your life. Many people feel like they've been cursed, that nothing seems to work out, that things keep getting worse and worse and worse rather than better and better and better. And even when things look like they're getting better, you just watch your clock and wait, because the feeling is inevitable that something's getting ready to go wrong, because can't this much be this good for that long? And everyone likes a comeback. Everybody likes to see somebody who appears to be on the losing end of something and things get reversed and they make their way back. Since you're still here, then we're going to operate throughout this series with a fundamental assumption, and that is God's not finished yet. You're still here. If you're a Christian and he were finished with you, you wouldn't be here. He would have taken you home and it would be over, but you're still here, so there must be something up. But you may be wondering, how is that possible when everything looks bleak for an extended period of time? Last time we looked at a man named what? Naaman. He's a man that had a curse on him. And through a supernatural act of God, the curse was lifted when he humbled himself and completed his obedience. God took away in a moment what he had struggled with for an extended period of time. It was a supernatural reversal. Well, that's nothing compared to what I'm going to share with you today. The story of Naaman really introduces us to another story. Naaman looks like the end of a story, but really it's the introduction to a saga. When we saw Naaman last time, we saw Naaman, a happy, healed man with $1.2 million. We ended the sermon last week with me being very upset that the prophet would not take the $1.2 million offered by Naaman to Elijah for his transformation. It seemed to me, in the name of the Lord, that was a great time for an offering. But the story continues. This is the same story, because verse 20 says, but Gehazi, that is Elijah's servant, thought. Now remember what Naaman thought, and he ran into a problem. Well, now Gehazi thought. He said, now my master didn't save this man's life. In verse 20, he saved his life, but not taking the money. He said, I don't understand that. Something wrong with my master. There's a problem here. He crazy. He says at the end of verse 20, as the Lord lives, I will run after him, Naaman, and take something from him. He ain't getting away with that much blessing for nothing. God been too good to him not to leave him something behind, and if Elijah won't take it, I will. Show me the money. I want to show you something that, if you read it too fast, you'll miss it. In fact, there are a couple of these as we go along. The end of verse 20, he says, I will run after him and take something from him. Watch this, as the Lord lives. Okay? As the Lord lives, I will run after him and take something from him. Now, I want you to compare that with what Elisha said in verse 16. But he said, as the Lord lives before whom I stand, I will take nothing. Elisha said, as the Lord lives before whom I stand, I will take nothing. Gehazi says, as the Lord lives, I will run after him and take something from him. The difference between the two comments is that Elisha said, before whom I stand. See, both use the name of God, as the Lord lives. But Elijah makes before whom I stand. In other words, Elijah said, before whom I'm accountable. In other words, Elijah had a sense of divine accountability. Gehazi was just using God's name. See, a lot of folk use God's name who don't have divine accountability. But they sound spiritual. Let me go get something in the name of the Lord. Yeah, because I think God wants me to have this. And so he thinks using God's name equals getting God's permission. He didn't have a sense of divine accountability. And so he says, I'm going to get something. Now stay with me here. He says, he runs up behind Naaman. He pursued Naaman. Naaman comes down off of his chariot. And then in verse 22, he constructs a lie. Now, here's the secret. Whenever you have to deceive to get God's blessing, whenever you have to be deceptive in order to get God to be good to you, that is your cue, something's wrong. If you can't be on the up and up and be blessed, then what you're getting is not a blessing, even though you may get the stuff you're after. He's after some money, honey. He's after some stuff. But he has to concoct a story in order to legitimize the stuff he wants. He concocts a story, and in order to take the pressure off of him, he concocts a story using his master's name. He says in verse 22, my master sent me. Well, that's a lie. Master said, we're not taking anything. But Naaman doesn't know. So he says, my master sent me. And we got two seminary students. Two young men, sons of the prophets. Okay? Who have come from the hill country. And, you know, they don't have enough to get through school. They don't have enough to make it. And we want to help a brother out. So, my master sent me to get a little something-something from you in order to help out these two guys. So he now has to create a story. Anybody in here ever created a story? To get what you wanted at work, get what you wanted from somebody. You crafted a story that was not real. But you still had God's name all up in it, as the Lord lives. Because he still got God's name up in it. But he has to craft a deceptive situation. Well, Naaman doesn't know, so Naaman gives him. See, he couldn't see that much money walking away. It was too much money, 1.2 million. He said, I got to get me something of that. So he crafts a story in order to get a quick financial fix. And he collects some of the goods that Naaman was going to give away and makes his way back. Now, Naaman sends some of his servants back with him in order to take some of the money and the clothes that Gehazi said that he needed. He comes to the hill country. When he comes to the hill, which is the elevated portion, he knows he can't have the servants come with him. Because he can't be observed. And so he takes it from their hand and goes into his house, verse 24, and stashes it. Then he goes in and he stands before Elisha, his employer, his master. And Elisha says, where have you been, Gehazi? And he says, I ain't been nowhere. I've been here. I ain't gone nowhere. Then he said to him, did not my heart go with you? In other words, I could feel you. When that man came up with that 1.2 million, I saw your heart popping out your chest. Boom, 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 boom. I could feel you. Now watch this, because this is the deep point he's going to make. When the man turned from his chariot to meet you, I knew something was off. My heart went with you, because you've been working for me for a long time. I know you, boy. Look at this phrase. Is it time to receive money, to receive clothes, to receive olive goods, to receive vineyards, to receive sheep, to receive oxen, to receive male and female servants? I got to read that again because that's a deep point. He says, is it time to receive money, clothes, olive groves, vineyards, sheep, oxen, male and female servants? Now, something ought to be hitting you right now. Something shouldn't sound right to you. You see, when he went to Naaman, all he got was money and clothes. That's all he asked for. When he comes back to Elisha, Elisha says, is it time to get money, clothes, oxen, sheep, vineyards, male servants, female servants? In other words, Elisha's bringing up stuff that Gehazi never asked for. He's bringing up a whole bunch of stuff. The key phrase here, is it time? Is it time? It wasn't simply what Gehazi wanted. It was timing. In other words, you want stuff before the time. And the reason we know it's not yet time is that you got to deceive to get it. You got to get it illegitimately in order to have it. It's not, watch this now, it's not that God doesn't want you to have these things. He doesn't want you to have them now. It's a timing issue, reflected by the fact that you had to create an illegitimate way in order to get it. Elijah knew Gehazi so well that he says, you've just begun this journey downhill. You started with clothes and money, but this thing is bigger than that, because you want houses and vineyards and sheep and oxen and male and female servants. In other words, you have begun a slippery slope that's going to take you downhill. Have you ever seen somebody going wrong and you know they've only just begun? In other words, they're doing a little something here, but you see them in prison 5 years from now, because you see that thing spinning out of control. The issue was time. And I must pause here, because a lot of us miss our blessing because we mess with the wrong time. It's not that God does not have a plan. It's not that God does not have a purpose. It's not that God doesn't want to be good to us, but because we mess with his timing, we mess up the enjoyment of his goodness. Because we're insisting on our time, what I want, this is when I want it. I don't care how God feels about it. And so I'm going to connive to get it. And we create our own timing. We have interfered with God's purpose. Now, I'll explain in a moment the relationship of timing. Therefore, verse 27, the leprosy of Naaman shall cling to you, and your descendants forever. So he went out of his presence a leper as white as snow. Here we have a quick sentence passed immediately on the servant because of the servant's action. Now, this seems to be overkill. Okay, he stole a little money and he lied. But how we come up with him, his children, his grandchildren, forever? That seems like a little bit of overkill. Now, this gets us into a subject that I'm only going to mention today because we're going to give a whole sermon to it, and that's generational curses. See, not only is he cursed, his sons are cursed, and their sons are cursed. His family line, his seed through the males, is cursed forever. Now, the implications of that one statement is nothing short of staggering. The man makes one bad decision and life is over as he knows it. I wonder if there's anybody here who's made a bad decision and you're still dealing with it. Maybe it was a bad financial decision and you've been paying for it for 20 years and you still can't get out of that hole. Maybe it was a relational decision that you made and you still can't get out of that hole. Maybe it was a personal decision that you made that was a mistake. And every day of your life, you're reminded, I made that mistake. And it's like a curse. Let's talk about this curse a little bit. Elijah says, the leprosy that was on Naaman is now yours. You now contract his illness. And he becomes white as snow. Now, lest you think this is a small thing, let me read you something. You don't have to turn there, but I want to read Leviticus chapter 13, which gives us God's guidelines for the leper in Israel. And of course, they are in Israel. And this is what God says. He speaks about it the whole chapter, but specifically, I want to raise the issue of the sentence that's passed upon the leper when he has contracted the disease. There are a number of passages here that talk about leprosy and its implications, and we don't have time to go over them all, but I do want to cite just a couple of verses that helps us understand in verse 45 and 46. As for the leper who has the infection, his clothes shall be torn, the hair of his head shall be uncovered, he shall cover his mustache and cry, unclean, unclean. He shall remain unclean all the days during which he has the infection. He is unclean, he shall live alone, his dwelling shall be outside the camp. So when you contracted leprosy, which was an infectious disease, it not only affected you physically, it affected you socially, because now you couldn't live with your family, you couldn't live with your friends, you were cast outside the camp, you were in a living hell. In fact, the word hell in the Bible is from the word Gehenna, and the word Gehenna was a garbage dump outside the camp. It was where you threw garbage. It was a big trash area that the city would take outside the camp, and it would regularly be where lepers would live, because then they could eat food from the scraps that were being thrown away. It was a horrible life. The man is in an irreversible situation. So I'm talking this morning to anybody who is in, or anybody who knows somebody who is in, what appears to be an irreversible situation, because it's forever. Anybody here in a forever situation? You don't know when this thing gonna turn around, because it hadn't turned around, and it doesn't look like it's gonna turn around, and it looks like God has stamped on your forehead, bam, forever. Forever you're going to be in debt. Forever you're going to be a failure. Forever, and you can see it worked out as your children. Forever you're going to be an alcoholic, and now your children have picked up alcoholism. Forever you're going to be a wife beater, and now your son is beating his wife. And forever you're going to do it. Forever, forever, forever. And that thing is passed down in your family, and you just like your mama, and you just like your daddy, and this thing is spinning and spinning, and you can see it worked out as a generational curse. And you seem to be in this cycle and can't get out. You can't cover it up. You can't camouflage it. It is an embarrassing situation, and a painful situation, and a lonely situation, and a financially destitute situation, since you can't work anywhere. He is suffering the consequences of his actions. Watch this. His children are suffering the consequences of his action. And that's because of a principle in the Bible that we'll go into later. But so this thing is passing down, and it's showing up generationally. And what's messing with me about this whole thing is that word forever. Because see, if you got a date when something's going in, then you can look forward to it. But when there is no date and it's forever, that's a bad situation. So here we are. He makes a bad decision. He wants money so bad, and many of us know people who, for the love of money, make decisions that are costly. We're through with Gehazi. He's through. It's over. All we can do is go, I feel sorry for him. Shouldn't have done it. Now, turn your Bible to 2 Kings chapter 8. Now the king, verse 4, was talking to Gehazi, the servant of the man of God, saying, please relate to me all the great things that Elisha has done. And he was relating to the king how he had restored to life the one who was dead. Behold, the woman whose son he had restored to life appealed to the king for her house and for her field. And Gehazi said, my lord, O king, this is the woman, and there is her son whom Elijah restored. When the king asked the woman, she related to him. So the king appointed for her a certain officer, saying, restore all that was hers and all the product of the field from the day she left the land even until now. What? Wait a minute. Hold it. What the heathen doing here? Wait a minute now. We just saw in chapter 5, the man's a leper. Lepers are banished because leprosy is infectious. The man is in isolation. But we come to chapter 8, and we're told two things about him. Number one, he's still called the servant of Elijah. Number two, he hobnobbing with the king. Something didn't happen. But it doesn't make sense, because the last time we checked, it said forever. You are doomed to a messed up life. You are doomed to a messed up family. You are doomed to a messed up future. You are doomed to be socially unacceptable. You are doomed to be in financial default. You are doomed. Your children are doomed. And there's nothing you can ever do about it, because it's going to be that way forever. But in chapter 8, homeboy is said to be servant of the man of God, currently his servant. Gehazi is not just in front of the king. He and the king are having a conversation. Not only are he and the king having a conversation, but the king has asked him, why don't you tell me some great things that Elijah has done? Just tell me about your boss man. How did this man get back here? How this man still a servant of Elijah? How is this man in front of the king, which means he's the liaison between Elijah and the king, and he's hobnobbing before the king? Something had happened. Something has turned around. This man's life has been flipped upside down, that he now not only is a servant of Elijah, he now gets to hang out with the king in the king's court. And this is why following scripture is so, so, so very important. Let me read the first three verses of 2 Kings 8. Now Elijah spoke to the woman whose son had been restored to life, saying, arise, you will go to your household and sojourn there, wherever you can sojourn. For the Lord hath called for a famine, and it will come on the land for, watch this now, how many years? 7 years. So the woman arose and did according to the word of the man of God, and she went with her household and sojourned in the land of the Philistines. How long? 7 years. And at the end of how long? 7 years, the woman returned from the land of the Philistines, and she went out to appeal to the king for her house and her field. Now watch this now. A woman has come to Elijah 7 years earlier. And she's come for help. Elijah says, well, look, you need to leave here now because there's going to be a famine in the land for 7 years. And you go back until the famine is over. In the course of 3 verses, we cover 7 years because it says at the end of 7 years, the woman returns. So we have just in a summary way covered 7 years. And the woman now returns. Gehazi is in the king's court talking to the king, who says, tell me some of the great things your boss man Elijah has done. Gehazi says, well, let me tell you about this woman. There's this woman, this Shunammite woman, whose son died, and my boss man Elijah brought her back to life. Watch this. While he was talking about the woman shows up in the king's court to ask the king to get her land back from the squatters that were squatting on her land during the time she left for the 7-year famine. So evidently there is a connection between this woman, the 7 years, Elisha, the king, and Gehazi. Because all of them converge in this one spot at this one time while they're discussing all that Elijah has done. And the author wants you to know that this thing happened over 7 years. 7 years, 7 years, 7 years. Now, what's the number 7 mean in the Bible? Completion. Whenever you see the number 7, something's being finished. Something's being culminated. How many times did Naaman have to dip? 7 times. He couldn't have got healed on the first time, second time, third time, fourth time, fifth time, or sixth time until he completed his responsibility under God. Until he completed his obedience, his situation did not change. Something has occurred and been brought to finality over these 7 years that's got Gehazi back up as servant of Elijah and in front of the king's presence at the very same time that this woman whose son was raised from the dead shows back up to ask for her land back in the king's court. Now, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to give you the end of the story. Next week, I'm going to fill in the story. Because see, if I tried to fill in the story, you wouldn't get the end of the story. And I know you don't want to leave here without some answers. All right? Because the question on the floor is, how could this be when he was cursed forever? And what I want to say to some folk who feel like you're in a forever situation. In other words, it feels like forever because it hadn't changed. It feels like forever because it's no different. It feels like forever because it goes from bad to worse. It feels like forever because there's nothing ever helping you and you cannot shake the bad decision that you made and you feel like you're in a forever quandary or conundrum. Well, it's all got to do with this 7 years. So let me give you the end of the story. We'll fill it in that because there's a lot to fill in. So we'll fill it in next time. Turn back a page to chapter 7. Let me read just a few verses. I'll connect it all next time, but let's give you the end now. Verse 3. For there were 4 leprous men at the entrance of the gate, and they said to one another, why do we sit here until we die? Okay, so we got 4 unnamed leprous men here. We will say, we will enter the city. Then the famine in the city, because remember, we got a famine. The famine in the city, and we will die there. And if we sit here, we'll die also. So let's come and let's go to the camp of the Arameans. Remember, Naaman is from Aram. If they spare us, we will live, and if they kill us, we will die. So they arose at twilight to go to the camp of Arameans. When they came to the outskirts of the camp of Arameans, behold, there was no one there. For the Lord had caused the army of the Arameans to hear a sound of chariots and sound of horses, even the sound of a great army. He goes on, behold, the king of Israel has hired against us the king of the Hittites and the king of the Egyptians to come against us. Therefore, they arose and fled in the twilight and left their tents and their horses and their donkeys, even the camp, just as it was, and they fled for their lives. Now watch this. When these lepers came to the outskirts of the camp, they entered one tent and ate and drank and carried from there silver and gold and clothes. Stick with me. What'd they steal? Silver and gold and clothes. All right, stick with me. And when they had hid them, they took silver and gold and clothes, and they hid them. And they returned and entered another tent and carried from there also and went and hid them. Somebody ought to be starting to make a connection here. They took silver and gold and clothes and hid them. Ah, here's the answer. Verse 9. They said to one another, we are not doing right. This day is a day of good news, but we are keeping silent. If we wait until morning light, punishment will overtake us. Now, therefore, let us go tell the king's household. Okay, come on now. Let's make some. We got to connect the dots here. Gehazi has gone and stolen some gold and clothes. He gets leprosy for he and his sons, and it's irreversible. But when you get to chapter 8, something is reversed, because he's now back in employment as the servant of Gehazi, and he now has access to the king. It's all happened, watch, stick with me now, over a 7-year period of time, which means something is being completed. So over this 7-year period of time, something that was messed up had to get corrected before something could be fixed up. When you turn back a chapter, we find 4 leprous men. And they go in and they see gold and clothes. They say, let's go get us some gold and clothes. They get us some gold and clothes, but then somebody says, wait a minute. Hold it. If we take this stuff, I can guarantee you somebody gonna catch us. I can guarantee you if we take the gold and the clothes, somebody gonna know it and somebody gonna catch us and we gonna be in big time trouble. Come on, is anybody following me here? Somebody, and it's a leper talking, somebody gonna catch us. So where am I taking you? What I'm trying to say is, what happened to Gehazi was a flaw in his character that needed to get fixed. As long as it was unfixed, it was irreversible. In other words, irreversible does not mean absolutely irreversible. Irreversible means irreversible until there's a change in you. It means irreversible until your character gets right. It means irreversible until you've come into your right mind, have gained your senses, and I will take as much time as it takes. It only took Naaman 7 dips. It took Gehazi 7 years. We'll take whatever time it will take. And you know, watch this, I'm going somewhere. You know when God is ready to reverse it. Watch this now. You know when God is ready to reverse your situation. You got to pay attention here. You know when God is ready to reverse your situation when he gives you a retest. You see, there's a retest going on here. It's the exact same situation. It's the exact same things. I believe that this is still Gehazi and his sons. It's the exact reduplication of the scenario to see whether you are ready for the irreversible to be reversed. The reason why for many of us the irreversible never gets reversed is we don't pass the retest. In fact, we don't even take the retest so that there is no reversal of the situation. But remember, 7 means God is going to keep this thing the way it is until you pass the test. God is not interested in the time. He's interested in the test. And until you pass the test, you'll go week after week, month after month, year after year, and nothing will change. You can pray about it all day long. The question is, did you pass the test? You can go to counseling all day long, but the question is, did you pass the test? You can talk to your friends all day long, but you got to pass the test. You can join church, give money, and go through all the religious paraphernalia, but if you ain't passed that test... See, you can pay your college tuition, but you got to pass the test. You can go to class every day, but you got to pass the test. You know when God is getting ready to reverse your situation because he puts you back in the same situation that caused you to fail the test to see whether you're now ready to pass the test. Israel wandered in the wilderness for 40 years because they wouldn't pass the test. Every time God put them back in the test, they grumbled rather than give thanks. So God said, let's go another year. Let's go another year. Let's go another year. Come on, let me give you another test. Let's go another year. Let's go another year. Let's go another year. Tell you, pal, you ain't passed it. Let's go another year. God's got some folk who are 21 years old, still in elementary school, because you won't pass the test. When does God give you the test? He gives you the test when your character is ready to take it. He's not going to waste the test. But as bad as this feels... You remember how when you failed the test, if it's ever happened to you, and the teacher said, I'm going to give you a retest. Now, that was good news and bad news. The bad news is that you failed. The good news is that she was going to let you try one more time. It's good news to know that God is willing to retest you. Now, it's bad that you failed the test, but it's good to know he'll give you another test. But what he won't do is pass you, tell you, pass it. He won't put you forward and reverse your staying in the third grade, going over the course again and again and again until you pass the test. A couple of secrets about this test and we'll close. Whenever the teacher in your school gave you a test, they never had much to say. Not during the test. Things were silent. Teacher ain't had nothing to say. Because the test is designed to see what you know based on what the teacher has already taught you. See, once you get the test, you ain't gonna hear from God. It's silent. Teacher ain't gonna talk during the test. But you sure better have a lot of conversations with him before that test. You better have a lot of conversations with him before the test, because during the test, you're not going to hear a thing. Because the question is, what you going to do with the data you receive when the test comes? And let me tell you what some people do. Because they keep failing, they quit school. See, we got a dropout problem today. Folk won't drop out because... I can't pass the test. or I don't want to study, or I don't want to take the test. So they drop out. Better to graduate at 20, having failed a few times, than to be 55 working on your GED. It's better to fail and then turn around and pass, even though you done lost some time. There are a lot of people here this morning who've lost some time. Years. Years. If we would take the tally, it would be years of lost time, lost joy, lost money, lost hope, lost stability, lost. You're going from situation to situation, marriage to marriage, job to job, person to person, situation to situation, and the thing looks irreversible. Let me suggest to you, there is a test you have not yet passed. At the end of 7 years, the lepers say, let's go see the king. Where is Gehazi? He's with the king. Something has happened here. Don't let the embarrassment of your mistake keep you from going to school. God is after one thing. You see, these four lepers have had a change of character. Because they say, that's not a good idea. I've been here before. And I know you're going to get got. I have been here before. We will surely be found out. How you know? Surely. Show enough. You going to get caught. Even if ain't nobody here, because then their heart going to go with you. You will surely be found out. I'll close with this. Now, this is the good news now. When we find Gehazi in chapter 8, my man back on top. He's servant of Elijah and hobnobbing with the king. You, the lepers, don't do that. Up there telling stories. He ain't up there just taking a note. He telling stories. Yeah, let me tell you about my boss Elijah. That's a bad boy. That's a bad boy. We had this woman and the baby died and the boy died. And you know, we brought the boy back to life. And why he's talking about the boy, the mother and the boy walk in at the end of the 7 years. My boy just had a nice old little conversation with the king. Which means that not only did his situation turn around, it turned around graphically. Let me explain something. When you pass, you graduate. When you pass, you graduate. You graduate to a whole nother level. This man failed greatly and graduated royally because he's talking to the king. So the question is there anybody here ready for a comeback? Is anybody here ready for a reversal? Is anybody ready here for a turnaround? Then you have to say this. You have to say, God, reveal the flaw in my character that caused me to even make the mistakes to begin with. Because remember, the problem wasn't just he stole. The problem was the time. But I wasn't willing to wait on you. I had to have it my own way because I had to use deception to get it. Reveal the flaw in my character. Teach me what's wrong with me. Correct me. See if there be, like David said, any wicked way in me. And you reveal my character so I can get that test taken. Because guess what? The sooner you take the test, the sooner that which is irreversible reverses. So the question is, do you want to go through another 7 years? Because guess what? God will keep it till you pass. You'd be 80 years old, still running away from this test. If you're tired of living a failed life, in whatever arena it is, in this case it was money, but it could be in any arena. If you're tired and you want to reverse, then you got to give God the right to develop your character, my character, so that he can give you the test. Because if he can't develop your character, he's not going to give you the test. I ain't going to test nobody that's not coming to class. Okay? If I can't teach you nothing, I ain't gonna test you. Because that's a waste of time for me to test you if I can't teach you. So if you're not willing to expose yourself to me so that I can identify the flaws in your character so I can take you back to the test. Because we got another one in the New Testament who God took back to the test of his failure. And when he passed the second time, God did the same thing. He brought him up to the king level. So if you're tired of living outside the camp, outside of God's blessing, God's goodness, God's power, God's deliverance, God's victory, you got to raise the question and give God freedom to show you the test you failed or the tests you failed. Because some of us have failed midterms, final, and quizzes. It's just one big goose egg right there, just zero. He can reverse the curses in your life. If he can retest you in silence because you are willing to let him deal with your character in public.